HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I am joined by Siobhan Kelly. Siobhan is Managing Director of Aon Human Capital Solutions. Siobhan, you're very welcome to the HR Headquarters podcast. How are you?
Thank you very much, Declan. I'm great. And thank you very much for having me. Looking forward to our chat.
Good stuff. I'll hand straight over to you. Do you want to just tell us about what you do and what Aon Human Capital Solutions do?
Yes. So for anybody who doesn't know, Aon is a professional services firm. So we have solutions around health, wealth, risk, and of course the area that I am managing director over is human capital solutions. So my background is as an occupational psychologist. So I am lucky enough to work with organizations every day to provide them with data and insights around how to help them make better decisions to attract, recruit, develop, retain, and what's really important in the current environment, how to sustain their talent. And we do that in lots of ways, usually psychometric assessments. So things like personality or behavioral questionnaires, as well as ability assessments, are at the core of our solution. And then we might also work with clients to provide things like video interviews or assessment centers, or some technology to help educate candidates about a company's brand and their employee value proposition, as well as career matching tools to support career mobility. And I am also very lucky to work with an amazing team of colleagues. So we have 8 occupational psychologists in Dublin, as well as a team of about 40 colleagues in our office in Loughrea in County Galway.
Excellent. Great summary there, Siobhan. So look, the reason we invited you on at the moment is you've got a lot of really interesting research out around early careers and graduates and people at the early stages of their careers. It's a competitive market, I think, for people at that stage in their career. How can organizations stand out in that war for early careers talent?
Yeah, it's a really competitive market. We know that early career programs have never been so important. And I suppose one of the main goals of early career programs is that piece around the attraction of high caliber talent to contribute to the organization. But like you say, we also know that early career programs are facing significant challenges to attract and retain talent. And this is for lots of reasons. And at Aon, we've come up with a term called the Great Convergence. So the Great Convergence, I suppose, being a driving factor of the Great Resignation. And so to give you some examples of why we're calling it the Great Convergence, so we see a convergence in skills. So companies are all trying to hire for similar skill sets. So think about the hot skills like IT, agile, tech, finance, you know, so all same companies are going after the same hot skills. We also see converging business models. So I can rent my phone from, or I can buy my phone from Tesco. I can rent my furniture from IKEA. I can buy insurance from Revolut. So companies aren't able to differentiate themselves because of the industry that they're in the same way that they used to. So they really need to rely on other factors like employee value proposition or EVP to differentiate themselves. And then, of course, we're also seeing a big convergence in work-life balance. So companies need to now all be health organizations to support their employees. And that's all compounded then by the current environment and the labor shortages that we're in as well. And this is why I suppose we teamed up with HPC to really understand the early career landscape in Ireland specifically and create a report like what you mentioned to help organizations to really maximize the potential of their early career programs. So then what can companies do to really stand out? So the findings from our research showed that the one thing that seems to have the biggest impact and drive candidate attraction is employee value proposition, so EVP. And so in the report, we've outlined a 3-step process to help companies to really get focused on this. So the first step is to define your EVP. So think about the purpose of your business, the needs of your business. What do you stand for? And then in line with that, how do you want to enrich the lives of your people? So it's not necessarily about copying what other companies are doing or just offering things that you think are going to be important, but really connecting it back to the purpose and of your organization. And then once you've that clearly defined, and also highlighting what it doesn't stand for, it becomes the foundation of your future decisions around employee experience. So first step is define it. The second step is then tell the story. So educate people. So educate prospective candidates. Talent as they go through the application process and the recruitment process. And then obviously your internal employees. So there was an interesting piece of research I came across, or statistic. 65% of candidates have reported discontinuing a hiring process because of an unattractive EVP. So the amount of work in the current environment that companies are doing to get people into their application form, to think over half of them would drop out because they find out about something about their EVP that they didn't know earlier on. So be really transparent, but educate candidates. So you can do this, leverage technology where candidates can complete things like realistic job previews, so little quizzes that give them insights into day of the life in your organization. What are your values, your purpose, your strategy? What do you stand for? So bring it to life. And then step three is to align your experience. So make sure it's visible to all employees what the EVP is within your organization. So embed it across individual, team, organizational level activities. Make sure your rewards framework aligns to it as well. And then, of course, once that's done, you know, continue to collect feedback, use data. So that was a really big theme from the piece of report. Use data as much as possible to drive your decision making. So monitor it, collect feedback. And once you do that, that should really allow you to stand out and differentiate yourself because you're being very transparent to employees and you're matching with their experience.
You touched one of the first things around the defining it. You mentioned to make sure that you understood what the people actually wanted as opposed to what you perceived they wanted. Where did you see mismatches there as you were doing the research? Was there any obvious examples there where companies were taught employee or early careers candidates wanted one thing, but in fact they wanted this completely different thing?
Not specifically within the report, but we know that, I mean, there's such a temptation for companies just to mirror what other companies are doing. So, you know, there's so many, when you think about employee value proposition and benefits and different offerings, you know, you can think about D&I, ESG, sustainability, well-being, flexibility, hybrid working, career mobility, you know, the list goes on. And so if you throw the kitchen sink at it, you're just diluting the message. And, you know, when we think about retention, and retention is really important, and that came out really clearly in the report, that retention is a massive challenge with regard to early careers, but it's also a really big indicator. So it's the main KPI that organizations would use to measure program success. And where there's a mismatch of expectations, it's going to result in turnover with talent. And I mean, we know that, I suppose, in terms of what people want, their expectations, their needs and values, that's shifted since COVID. I mean, even if we think about ourselves and what we expect from work, that's shifted. And you need to understand that. So for example, if a company has a very transactional job or a very transactional position, then they're going, you know, salary will matter. So salary being a big part of the EVP, maybe things like location, hours, things like that. But they can't go and then advertise it as some sort of transformational experience, because there's going to be obviously an individual who wants a transformational experience. If they join a job that's very transactional, you know, they're going to be sitting there going, well, this isn't what I thought and I'm out of here. And we know that most early career talent and graduates are looking for careers with development opportunities and more of a transformational experience. And so your EVP needs to align to that. So things like values, we know structured programs really matter, development opportunities and well-being initiatives will really matter as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. What other components, you've touched on a few there, obviously, Siobhan, but is there a ranking in your head, or is there certain things that matter more to individuals, or is it more about attracting the people who match with your EVP, if you like?
I think it's the latter. I think it's using data to really understand What are the needs of the employees that you're trying to attract, and how can your company best match them? In general, there are those factors that I mentioned that we know are important to early career talent. So a really big trend that we're seeing at the moment is in the space of well-being and resilience. And so if we're thinking about retention, which as I mentioned, Kim Ash, is really key in the report, we know that people who are more resilient are more likely to stay with an organization. But in general, research would suggest that only 30% of people are resilient. And that's despite all of the different initiatives that we've seen happening over the last couple of years. And then if we layer on top, what does early career talent specifically look like in terms of their well-being? 45% of early career talent have reported poor mental health. So almost half of early career talent. So well-being is really important to EVP, and an offering that companies need to provide both to support their talent, but also to support retention. And we know that 6 out of 10 early career talent in general don't feel comfortable talking about their well-being. And in some organizations, we'd see maybe 50% turnover within the first year of early career talent joining an organization. So at Aon, what we're trying to do about this is we want to give early career talent access to insights about their resilience and well-being. And so to do this, we're using our tool called Human Sustainability Index. So that looks at 8 different areas of well-being. So areas like mental well-being, emotional, physical, financial, you know, purpose and meaning, community, relationships. And this also supports, so this supports better onboarding for those individuals. It helps to reduce turnover, and it helps to enable early career talent to really have an easier and more successful year. And then in an organizational level, it also helps them to collect data, understand what roles are maybe more at risk from a well-being or a mental health episode or whatever it might be, who's at risk of turnover, and how can we be more proactive about our well-being interventions.
Yeah, some scary stats there around well-being and mental well-being. I'm going to take a quick break, Siobhan, and we come back. I'm just going to ask you about how organizations can best assess the fit with their organization. Perfect.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
So Siobhan, before the break, we spoke a lot about what the attraction might be of early careers candidates to an organization, but obviously it is a two-way street and the organization needs to make sure that that their individual is a good fit for them. Something that always strikes me around early career people is the CV is less of a useful tool in some ways. I'm slightly generalizing, because there's not a lot to be added to it. So A, am I right or am I wrong? And B, you know, if I'm right or if I'm partially right, what is a good way to assess, or what are you guys doing with your clients in terms of assessing new talent?
Yeah, well, I would agree. I think you're right. So CVs are a very subjective measure of performance. And if we think about validity, so validity being a measure of what it's supposed to measure, and in this case, we're trying to measure job performance or predict job performance, there's a very low link or correlation between CVs and information on CVs to job performance. And I suppose, again, if we think about the wider context and the environment and the world of work that we're currently in, the purpose of early career programs is to accelerate the development of future skills. And the report showed that it's also for other reasons, like the identification of future leaders and to support workforce diversity. And alongside that, you know, there's some really interesting statistics, like 44% of roles are going to be automated by 2035. So between 10 and 15 years, almost half of jobs that we know now are going to be automated. We also know that the half-life of skills is about 3 to 5 years. So what that means is that in 3 to 5 years, 50% of the skill set of your organization is going to be obsolete. So we need to move away from hiring early career talent for a specific job or a specific role, and we need to hire talent who are going to be continuously able to re and upskill in line with these changing job requirements. So we need to look at behaviours like willingness to learn and seek out learning opportunities, to be able to work in a flexible way, to be able to deal with change and to have that sense of curiosity and innovation. And these are the behaviours that are going to identify or indicate potential in the new world of work. But that's not listed on a CV. You know, a CV tells us, you know, maybe about qualification, where somebody lives, and maybe about experience, and at early careers that could be quite limited. But even despite that, even though it seems so obvious, a report showed that 90% of organizations are still using CVs in some capacity. And I know, I mean, in Ireland, you know, our model of working and HR practices can tend to be a bit more traditional. So it's hard to move away completely from that. But we definitely need to make some changes. So companies are doing things like blind CVs, so they remove the name at least. But, you know, they're a very subjective measure. They're bringing in bias, and it's important that we try to make sure we're supporting that with other more objective measures. So we need to use the first step is that we really need to look at our organization and reframe or redefine our model of success. So what does good look like? In the past, it might have been for a specific job, so it's quite easy to define. In today's world, in the future world, it's about the behaviors. So look at what are the behaviors that are important. Use data, benchmark them, use market research, models from vendors, and so on. Then measure those behaviors using objective measures. So things like personality assessments, ability assessments, maybe AI-rated video interviews, assessment centers, and so on. And this will help to identify future potential, but also help to bring in a more diverse workforce. And then if we're thinking about post-hire, we need to underpin all of our development activities with these future skill models. So, you know, make sure that what you're trying to develop is linked to these models of success. And we're connecting up then talent acquisition, so pre-hire activities, and talent development activities, to make sure that there's a continuity in the person we're hiring and the skills we're trying to develop.
If you remove the CV from the application process, what's a good application process, if you like, or what do you believe, what should an organization be capturing?
Again, it comes back to data. So in an ideal world, a organization will conduct what we call a validation study. So they will look at who are the high performers in the organization, as well as who are the mid and the low level performers in the organization. And what are the characteristics associated with those high performing individuals? And they will look for that sort of information. Obviously, for some organizations, it'll be important to capture data around eligibility to work in the country, if that's important, or criminal convictions and other kind of, you know, real tangible transactional information like that. But I would definitely try to weigh much more heavy on measuring potential. And yeah, those, they know the characteristics that are going to be important for success.
And do you believe internal benchmarks like that against your top performers is the way to do it? Or is there a merit to using external sort of benchmarks?
In an ideal world, best practice is company to use their own benchmarks. So if they have, say, for example, they have psychometric data and they have their own performance data, whether that's maybe sales information or absenteeism or turnover, or whatever is important to them, and they'll correlate the two. So they look at what is the psychometric data that is predicting high performance. And so we've got a great case study with one client, Irish client, technology client, where individuals being hired in against a certain model of success using our psychometrics were generating 36% more revenue and 42% more profit compared to individuals who were lower performers against the assessment process. So it's about trying, you know, HR trying to really use data and understand data to influence the business and move the dial in terms of HR management processes.
And is it easier to remove bias in a application or assessment process by using, you know, tools like that?
Yes, for sure. So things like psychometric assessments or AI rated video interviews, as long as it's done in the right way and it's transparent what the how the scoring logic works, and things like assessment centers are by nature objective measures of potential. So you're completely removing bias. And then, I mean, you know, it's about having a balance. It's important to, you know, have that one-to-one interaction and maybe have the interview and things like that. But as much as possible, you're bringing in the widest, most diverse talent pool and looking at the criteria that really matters.
One thing you touched on earlier as one of the components, I think you said, of what candidates are looking at is career development.
Yes.
What's realistic for an organization in terms of showing a potential employee what their career will look like? How long does that go? What sort of milestones would be involved? What's the reality?
Yeah, and I mean, we know that early career talent in particular do really care about this. And I even know from, you know, my own team getting questions around what is my career path. It's a challenge in today's environment because career paths aren't as linear as they used to be. It's much harder to define them. And that's partially due to what I had mentioned earlier in terms of, you know, level of automation and new jobs being created. So we're definitely seeing an evolution in terms of career paths moving from that, you know, really linear or that even Y shape to more of a rock climbing wall or a tree. And even if I think about the colleagues that I started working with in Aon 9 years ago, you know, many of them are now still with Aon, but in roles that didn't exist at the time. And if they had been given a very traditional career path, then they probably wouldn't have sought out new learning opportunities or gained new experiences to go off in different directions and carve out these jobs. So people in organizations, employees need to share stories to get people thinking, but we also need to support early career to really plan out their career and not assume that they have these skills. So we need to provide them with insights, to provide them with feedback. And this could be supported then through technology like job matching tools. So this is where an individual might complete a series of questionnaires. You can support it with further assessments if you wish. But the idea being that they get a percentage match to a certain job or job area. And this really helps to give the individual ownership over their career. Like, they're really cool. There's different ones with different levels of science behind them. I completed one and got matched to hairdressing, which wouldn't be suited to me at all. But my 16-year-old niece was here recently and she completed it. And, you know, she completed a different one that had a bit more science. And she was really fascinated because the matches that she got were jobs that she'd never either thought about or heard about. So it helps you to think much more broadly about the jobs available across the organization. And it also helps to support a much broader succession pipeline because it's more cost effective to grow your talent internally than hire talent externally. And it creates this culture around building a learning mindset where people are constantly thinking about other jobs and what are the training and development initiatives that I need to engage in order to move into those areas.
And Siobhan, sorry, last thing or last question. You mentioned earlier near the start that your three elements of the EVP, define, tell the story, and then align experience. I was very interested when you mentioned that because you mentioned matching the behaviors within the organization with your reward or your benefits, or I can't remember the exact phrase you used. But this has to be more about tricking, you know, early careers to join you. You know, this is retention, I presume, is absolutely driven by your company's values matching those stated EVP goals, if you like.
Yes, 100%. And, you know, an example of that might be if you have well-being as part of a pillar of your employee value proposition, then when you think about your reward frameworks, you know, they need to support that. You know, they need to provide people potentially with time off to work on their well-being or to really promote sustainability. Same with, say, career development. If you're saying that's a really big employee value proposition for you, you know, you need to reward people for making moves, you know, whether they're up ways, down ways, sideways, and you can't penalize people for doing that. So it really requires a bit of extra thought from a HR perspective to make sure you're reinforcing and you're really walking the talk, essentially.
You just stole the phrase I was about to use there about walking the talk, yeah, for sure. Listen, sorry, I know I said the last question was the last question, so I'll try and make
That's
this
okay.
one the last question. You mentioned applicants falling out during the process because they would discover something about the EVP. Could you bring that to life a bit more, how that would happen and how you could mitigate it?
Yes. So, for example, and I think everybody is probably guilty of starting this, you see an application form or you see a job on LinkedIn or wherever it is, and you say, oh, that sounds really good, I'll apply for that. And you start completing the application process. And you might even like fall out of the application process then. So maybe you've read somewhere that it takes 2 minutes to complete and you're already 20 minutes in and you're writing these big spiels of information and you're saying, right, well, I'm not going to do that. Or you go through and you get to maybe point of interview and the organization has told you something about either development opportunities or values or strategy or the impact that you can have. And at the interview, you discover something very different. And you're saying, right, okay, that's me, gone. So, you know, it's really trying to be as transparent upfront with the individuals and bringing that life to life on your website and through, like I mentioned, the realistic job previews or quizzes to help to educate people. And things like, you know, we know, even if we're thinking early careers, we know things like salary really matters. We know formal development really matters and structured programs. But these are things that aren't often communicated upfront. So be more transparent, communicate these things up front, and candidates will thank you for that.
Yeah, I think it just it saves everybody time in the long run and money.
Yes, exactly.
Siobhan, thanks so much for your time today. If someone or if any of our listeners want to discuss a little bit more around their early career strategy and what Aon Human Capital Solutions can do for them, what's the best way to get in contact?
Yes, I'd love to have a chat with anybody around these topics. So my email address is siobhan.kelly@aon.com, or you can find out more online at assessment.aon.com.
Thanks, Siobhan, and we'll link all of that, as always, below the podcast. Siobhan, thanks for joining
us. Thank you very much, Declan. It was a pleasure talking to you.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.